Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. This week we hear from Gregor Townsend on the side that he's chosen to face France this weekend. We hear from Stuart Hogg and Kelly Brown in camp. Plus, Mossy Al and I discuss all the games from the weekend. Al Mossy, believe it or not, it's team announcement day. Gregor has announced his squad to face France in Nice, away from home, at the weekend. Now, before we talk about the team that he's chosen, let's hear from the head coach himself.
Yeah, it's been interesting seeing how players have trained. We always had a squad in mind for this game, given some players finished the season earlier, the Edinburgh players and some of our players playing in England. So we were keen to involve them in the first game. Then it was looking at combinations of what would suit a winning performance and seeing where we were with injury and form during training. So we feel it's a strong team, a team with players that have played for Scotland, played really well in the past, and a couple of guys coming off the bench, hopefully to win their first caps.
You've got Duncan Taylor and Hugh Jones in the centre partnership, the first time that they'll play together. Duncan's obviously been out of the Scotland duty for a while now, but that partnership and that combination, what can we expect from those two together?
Well, it's just, first of all, great to see Duncan back in a navy blue jersey. He's played really well for Scotland when he's had the opportunity. My first couple of games as coach with Scotland, Duncan was a great player. First of all, fullback in our game against Italy and Singapore, and then the following week he had to play centre and wing in our win over in Sydney. He bravely played the third game in Fiji as a centre before he broke a bone in his hand. So he's a tough competitor, a very, very good communicator in defence, and an excellent attacker, someone who can carry the ball and give us gain line, but also can offload and be a good link player and a very good support player. It'll be interesting to see how he works with Hugh. Hugh is back to full fitness. He missed the last few games of the Six Nations. He's in really good condition. He's played very well for Scotland in the past, especially from an attacking point of view with his try-scoring rate. And him and Duncan together in defence, I think that can be a really strong unit. So it's exciting. It's exciting. Any player that we've chosen this week to get the opportunity to see them play in a test match, a away test match against a very good side.
And another centre who may get an opportunity off the bench will be Rory Hutchison. How has he transitioned to Scotland camp back in June, and what have you made of him so far?
Well, he was in great form for his club in the second half of the season, mainly playing at 13, but we've seen him play at times at 12, and even with 13 on his back, he steps up at first receiver a fair bit and uses a handling ability to kickstart moves for the Northampton back line. He's done that with us. We've also given him opportunities to run at 10. This was a position that he played a couple of seasons for Scotland under 20s. So he's covering all three midfield places. He could come on at 10, 12 or 13. He's an excellent ball player, sees space, got real acceleration both in attack and defence. And really for him, it's about getting to speed with the rugby we aspire to play, and more importantly, our systems in attack and defence, and obviously the thrill of winning your first cap for your country.
Another debutant that potentially could get a call could be Scott Cummings, Glasgow Warriors. What's impressed you of him of late?
Well, I think he's much more comfortable in our environment now than when he came in last season. I think he came in for a couple of days training, and that's because he's gained confidence of playing well at club level. He's another year older. He has trained really well with us. Second row is a very competitive area, and some experienced players he's going up against. But he brings a set-piece ability with a ton of pace, which is very rare in second rows throughout the world. And he's added the physical parts to his game, clearing contact and defence. We've seen that throughout the season, especially in the big games at the end of the season with Glasgow. He really stepped up well. And when you look to the bench, it's the majority of those guys are young, bring pace, will take the game to the opposition. So we really see not only the starting team having the fitness to go into the last 20 minutes against France and up the game, but those coming off the bench really stepping up and taking the game to the opposition.
When we look at the game itself on Saturday, it's going to take place in the south of France, in Nice. Now, you have experience of playing for Brive and Cast, and you've played in the south of France. Is there a different feeling to this game because of the location and because it's a test match? What will the players expect from this game in the south of France?
I believe so. It's different for a couple of reasons. It's not in the Six Nations. We tend just to play France in the Six Nations, and those are in BT Murrayfield or Stade de France, and This isn't a great stadium, but it is a different venue for France too. I'm not sure if they've played many games or any games in this stadium before. It's in the summer, even though it's a 9 o'clock kickoff, it's going to be warm. It's the first game of the season for both sets of players, so it will be different. There'll be mistakes like there are in any rugby games, and it's an opportunity for both teams to play well, but a massive opportunity for us to go out and put in a performance away from the confines of our home, where we'll be playing most of our games over the next few months, and play well and stick to our systems and show what we can do away from Scotland.
Mossy, I'll start off with you. Any surprises in the squad that he's chosen, or how do you examine this team?
Well, it's what you surprise it against, isn't it? I mean, you've got a squad of 44 that was cut to 40 last week. There's 15 start, obviously, 23 in the squad that will travel. So, I think the goal in these games are to reward yourself for all the hard work you've done as an individual, to put your marker down for your performances. And hopefully be selected and perform well in the World Cup squad, but I don't really see it as being surprises or omissions or inclusions. It's an opportunity for the players and the coaches to put to test what they've been working on, and to put it into practicality. Very difficult. Gregor said 2 weeks ago when he was on that when your first game of the season for those who play is always difficult. You need to get up to speed. Your body aches. You could be super fit, but you're not match fit. Much like the first tie in a sevens tournament, it's always absolutely horrific because you don't get your second win. So there'll be an untidy element maybe to the fixture. So it's really hard to have your first game of the season being an international game.
Is it harder because it's away from home as well?
I think that adds in it as well. It'll be heat. It'll be hot. It's at 9 o'clock over there, but it'll still be pretty warm down in Nice. You're trying to get combinations together. Players will be very well prepared. You saw it the weekend with England and Wales. It's some parts of the game are exceptional, some of the fitness is exceptional, but you can't get it all right in the first shot. So I think it's a strong team, but I think whoever Gregor would have picked have been strong, just again to the depth we have in the squad. But it's the players will look at this as their opportunity to show what they can do, what kind of form they're in, and work in units as well, not just individuals. It's back three, it's back row, it's midfielders. There's three areas of the squad that would be really difficult to narrow down to a 31. So, as well as perform as an individual, you're looking to perform in your wee unit.
He'll probably have shared a plan with the wider group as well as to what the first two or maybe three games in a summer series looks like. So, there won't be the usual disappointment in not being selected. You know you'll get your opportunity. If you're not in this squad, there will be an opportunity for you later on, but as Mossy says, it's the first chance for them to get out there and actually, after an awful long pre-season, play some rugby. The rugby has ramped up, we'd heard from Gregor beforehand, but it's the first opportunity to get out there and play a game, which is what these guys love doing.
It is hard, you have this kind of idealistic view of what you want to do and how you want to play, but you just forget how hard it is, even with, 2.5 months, something since they played. But it's a shock to the system, that first 10 minutes in any international when you're in the middle of the season, but an international first up, they'd be looking at the clock probably 12, 13, 40 minutes thinking, is that all? Yeah. But get into the game, and then there's one or two possible debutants there as well. There's experience, there's leadership, there's some outstanding quality, there's guys who've been involved and been big players looking to kind of reassert themselves. So it's got all the right ingredients for individuals to show their worth and prove they deserve their place.
Mossy, you mentioned there that it's difficult to kind of look at too much detail into the squad he's chosen. It's the first team he's chosen for the first game. But as ex-players, if you're chosen, or you're not chosen. What's the mindset there? If you do you want to be selected for the first game, the second game? Are you thinking about that? I mean, as ex-players, what goes through your mind?
I'd always look and see if Mossy was in a team. Mossy was in a team, I knew I was in the right team.
Oh, stop it. I think you want to play the first one. But it's all different. I suppose it's different reasons in terms of who joins the squad at different times. So Greg, I think, would be last finished. Yeah. Sean, Maitland, Usares, Greg with the top 14 finals. Yep. Probably the last game. So there'll be players who have played more recently than others, albeit it's still quite a while. But I think you want to be involved in the first game. But it's so different. It's so difficult because we could sit here and look at all the permutations, yeah, what's going to happen. But we don't have a reference point, really. Mm-hmm. And that's what Saturday is. It's your first reference point for individuals and for coaches. Let's hope there's not injuries, but that it's a possibility as well that some of the squad decisions may be made for you. I've seen that already with some of the other teams. But I don't think as individuals you think like that, as players you think like that. I just think I'd be quite keen to be in the first game, Al, would you?
I think so, yeah. I think, though, if you put your coach's hat on, or even from a fan's point of view, what's important is that we go to Japan with 31 players playing well. You know, and that's what Greg will be looking at. He'll be looking at how much game time, you mentioned Greg and Sean there, how much game time do certain individuals need, how much do certain combinations need. Ali Price and Adam Hastings, you know each other well, but how much international rugby have they played together? And Greg will have a look at the whole tournament there to make sure that when he's going into the Ireland selection or he's going into the Russian selection, that he just makes sure that he's got the combinations that he needs.
I would dig a wee bit deeper than that as well, in the right lines, Al, but the goal for the players, grumpy ex-player coming out alert, and I don't think it is the goal for the players, it's sometimes a goal for us as supporters and everybody else around it, isn't the 31 the goals to start?
No.
You know what I mean?
But I was saying from the coaches and a fan's point of view,
yeah,
from a player's point of view, I agree with you completely. Yeah.
Like I think we sometimes, looking, as I was a player, and you feel as everybody else is looking at the kind of squad announcement day, 31, who's in the 31, who's in the plane. I think as a player you're looking, I'm playing this weekend because I want to start every game. I don't want to play this weekend to try and cement my place as a 31.
Yeah.
And I think the players do think of that, and I think it's maybe something that, because the squad announcement of World Cup is such a big deal, saw it yesterday a couple of days ago with England, that I think players think starting 15 rather than squad at 31. Mm. Do you?
I do agree with you. I think also, and there's ways of doing that. So, if you look at combinations, and it might say take the second row, for instance. Because I know it better than I know 9 and 10. But we could quite easily have gone 9 and 10. But take the second row. There's a balance to the second row that you need. So, you'll be looking at it as an individual, but you'll also be thinking about who might be next to you, and how you can make sure that you show that together you bring as much as you need to bring. And 9 and 10 are a good example of that as well.
And I think that's more important now than it ever was before. Like, it's so difficult, and they're so kind of little between the individuals. It's actually how well you can perform and how well you can make the person next to you perform becomes a big part of it.
How well really can you make the person next to you perform? Yeah. That's a perfect line.
Yeah.
It's not just what you can do to influence the game, it's how you influence others around about you, how you get the best out of somebody who's maybe playing alongside you. The balance of a back row being key, the balance of a back three, the ability to work with each other. So those combinations are really important, and they'll come into players' thinking as well. How can I make sure that I am making the player outside me play as well as they possibly can as well?
France will be tough. We've already said, they announced the squad in the middle of June. And look back at the Six Nations game, that was the best performance, I think, was the performance against us.
Because the week before
they were terrible against England.
They were awful, weren't they?
It was 27-10 it ended up in pass. And I remember I was commentating the game, and I remember the kind of general feeling was that Scotland underperformed, and they did. There was a few mistakes, but I thought for elements of that game France were outstanding. One or two of their counter attack tries and some of the subtlety, I thought they were.
Bastard's
Chip and Gareth,
cameo
just after half time, wasn't it? And we missed a couple of opportunities, and we certainly didn't play our best, but I felt that France were back to being what everybody kind of associates France being, that attacking edge. And I think, I may be wrong, but I think in the south of France, a bit of heat in their back, it's cliched, but I think there'll be a big challenge.
There'll undoubtedly be mistakes in the game, though, as you touched on earlier on. Like, it takes you a long time to get used to playing rugby again. Never mind getting used to playing test match rugby. These guys haven't played in over 2 months, and all of a sudden they're into a test match with all the pressures that brings. But sometimes that'll make it more entertaining.
The
odd mistake here and there might free the game up a wee bit. And when you've got two teams, France and Scotland, that look to play a lot of rugby, I think it'd be a very entertaining game.
The rugby fixtures kicked off last week. We saw England against Wales and Ireland against Italy. Did you guys get a chance to see any of those games?
Yeah, picked up highlights of both games. Both good games of rugby. I think probably with the exactly what we said about pre-season, there was mistakes in both games and they can get better. But good games of rugby, interesting games of rugby, and England's squad announcement coming off the back of their weekend as well flags up a few talking points too.
Yeah, I saw bits of them. I didn't see as much of the Ireland game. I'll probably have another look at some of that. The England-Wales game was, I said before, it was a real kind of contrasting bit. Some bits were outstanding, some bits were pretty poor. I didn't see a willingness to take a risk that I thought I might, especially from England. It kind of was safety first, and then Wales for certainly the first 20, 30 minutes never had any control of the ball or possession of the ball really to control the game. And I just felt that it was a direct route first, which I hope isn't really what we're going to see every time they play. Maybe it was just because it's the way the two teams kind of play against each other. But I would like to have seen the ball moved a bit more. Obviously, as a back, you want to see that. But there were definitely opportunities to move it to attack. And again, first game of the season, everybody's out of position, out of breath a wee bit. You maybe do go safety first. But hopefully this weekend we'll see the ability to attack the space that's there rather than just play what's perceived to be too safe.
And one of the kind of stories from that game, I guess, was the fact that Gareth Anscombe got that injury and has now been ruled out of the World Cup.
Big miss.
Completely. How much is a big miss for Wales?
I think that's a big miss. I think I think the Wales play a really structured game, but he's one of the individuals that can do something out of structure.
Something a bit different.
At the right time, a wee bit different, a wee bit instinctive. Now, depending who comes in or plays, Jared Evans could do that. Rhys Patchell's got that. So these are the guys that maybe come in. Obviously, you've got Dan Bigger there. Rhys Pleasant, I think's in and around. But I think it's a miss, yeah. And it's a blow for Ospreys, having just signed him as well, looking ahead at the season. But he is a player within that really structured team that can do something unstructured.
It's also... sounds negative, but it's also a sign of what we might see over the next 3-4 weeks. Test match rugby is brutal, it's physical, so there's likely to be injuries, and how squads manage that, who they can bring in, who they've already had go through the whole process that maybe then gets an opportunity and might not have got the opportunity will be key. We're talking about 31s, but actually Gregor mentioned it in the last pod, it's 37, 38 that you're really looking at probably utilising throughout the tournament.
And on that, England haven't announced a 31. They've got 3 more games to play with a squad of 31. You know, so it's how they manage it. I know we've covered it before. It's good for continuity, but and Eddie Jones did made it a reasonable point. He wants the kind of the circus, as he put it, around team selection and who's omitted and who's included to happen in August rather than be in September days or before you go
it's
to
done and dusted. Don't have to worry
it's
about
out
it.
The way. But I quite like it as well. But I still think there'll be changes between now and 3 international. If you look at the Six Nations, the same team, you know, very rarely would start 3 games in a row without somebody being admitted to injury. So let's hope it doesn't happen, Ben, mate.
From a player's point of view, I can see the benefits of it.
Yeah,
you know, he's had the competition that you need to drive standards or effort at training, although that just gives you that top kind of 5%. You're always going to get that effort anyway. So I can understand he was talking about being the best prepared England team that had ever gone to a World Cup. Now everybody will be looking to be the best prepared team.
Who's
going to
say they're not the best prepared, though?
Yeah,
I think we're the second or third best. We've been better before. It's never going to happen.
I think they were
you
better.
Hear it all the time.
To be fair, the person that would say it would be Eddie Jones.
But he's changed something. He's made a point of difference to be the best prepared. Like he said, right, the reason I'm going out 3-4 weeks early is so they've got an opportunity to be better prepared. Everybody else will be saying it and maybe not have changed anything apart from
depends
the French.
Depends on your personnel. Depends on the ability of your personnel, the depth of ability you have, and it depends on, you know, if you've got a kind of easygoing group or a group that needs more kind of confrontation in it. It's each to their own, but I do see some merit in going early, but I think for us, for Scotland, with the depth of squad we have, and it would be I think it'd be too difficult to pick a 31 before seeing the some of the guys in action.
Well, that wasn't only rugby this weekend. We also had the Rugby Championship continued with Australia, the thumping win over New Zealand in Perth, and South Africa convincing win over Argentina. One of the huge talking points from that game was the red card to Scott Barrett. We've all seen it. What's your take on it? Red card or?
Yeah, it's a red card, isn't it?
Red card all day long. Stonewall, absolutely. Process followed perfectly for me. And, if Scott Barrett had put his arms out, it would probably have been a yellow, his arms out in front of him, but it's a clear shoulder charge to the head, and there wasn't a drop in height or a change in height from Hooper. Yes, he was low, but he didn't change dramatically in height, and I think you just have to congratulate the decision for me and change of player behaviour.
Yeah, I think he thought he was going to make that left-shouldered tackle. I think he was going for the outside tackle. And there was a
kind of
Barrett, so that in the half dummy, and he then stepped back in and clipped him with his right shoulder.
But your both arms are out. No, if you're going to make a tackle,
it's a red card. But I think in his thought process, I'm hitting this from my left. His left's coming round to make that tackle. His left shoulder, he stepped back in, and he's just tucked. He's tucked at no stages. And as soon as the whistle went, you could see it in his face.
And you said that to me when we watched it. You were like, he knew straight away when he walked away.
Again, though, because it's the credit to Scott Barrett and the type of bloke he is, and the environment of what they just accepted it. You know, he knew it was wrong, but he didn't cause a scene. But it was his action was wrong, the decision was right. It was a stonewall shoulder charge, direct force to the head. It's dangerous, no mitigation, so it's a red card.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the laws, so there's a process, decision making for high tackles, so head or neck contact, degree of danger, yes or no. Yes, it's a straight red card with mitigating factors. Now, those factors are tackler makes attempt to change height, the ball carrier drops in height, the tackler is unsighted, head contact is indirect, so he hits the shoulder and then it moves up to his head, or it's reactionary tackle with immediate release. So
that indirect's changed, I think.
Has it been updated?
Yeah, I think.
That was on the World Rugby's website.
Maybe it has, but it was just... Yeah, any contact with the head, because the famous one, or the famous one if you watched it, I suppose, was the Under-20s World Cup where the New Zealand player tackled the Welsh player when he caught the ball, and his shoulder kind of charged into the Welsh player's head, but it glanced his shoulder first.
Mm-hmm.
So they were saying it was actually indirect, so it wasn't in a yellow card, but I think it's any contact with the head now. But I mean, the bit before that you read out is it's whether it's a high tackle or a shoulder charge. So obviously the first thing, it was a shoulder charge, so I think it's right. And let's hope the players are changing. It's difficult. There'll be some times where there's contact with the head that it's totally unavoidable, and it is almost possible not to. But I think for that, I think it's a good decision.
I think it's the right decision, absolutely. And probably as big a talking point is the fact that Australia won so convincingly. Only a few weeks out from the World Cup.
They look good, Al.
They are good, but so are the Kiwis. I spoke to Callum Gibbons, who's Glasgow's resident Kiwi, and what worried him was that he felt as if the Zealanders, they didn't have that set point game plan that they would normally have, that they looked a little bit at times as if they were a bit lost out in the park, which is very, very unlike New Zealand. Mm. This weekend will be an incredible.
That'll be a good one
game.
This weekend.
Eden Park, they'll be looking to avenge that defeat, I'm sure.
The defence wasn't great either, and they conceded a lot of line breaks. I think they're changing the defence to be a bit more aggressive or quicker off the line. But the team that won the championship and the team that I would kind of raise my eyebrows most is South Africa. Mm. They've got the ridiculous physicality that they've always had, but they're playing offload rugby as well. Razi Erasmus thinks time maybe in Northern Hemisphere has added to the kind of some of the attacking principles they have, and they'll be a tough team to beat come World Cup. The size, the physicality, the depth, the squad they have, and their reward for winning a rugby championship was, I think, they moved down the world rankings. They moved to fifth or something.
Two teams in South Africa and New Zealand that are very much on Scotland's longer term view. There's a tough group to get through first, but I mean, 6 months ago you would have been talking about the fact that you want to avoid the All Blacks at all costs. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the way South Africa are playing, I'm not sure which one of those would be the quarter final you would choose to get.
Do you know who'll be the referee for the New Zealand South Africa game in the World Cup? Nope, Jerome Garces, the same referee from the weekend. Another fact about him was he was also the same referee that sent off Sonny Bill in 2017. So there's only ever been four players that have had red cards for New Zealand, and he sent off two of them.
Both correct decisions though.
Yes, both cricketers. Do you know who the other two were, by any chance, for New Zealand that's been sent off?
Give me an era.
1967.
Nah.
It was here.
Oh, it was Colin Meads.
Colin Meads again. It was, Scotland versus New Zealand, it was, 1967. Yeah. It was actually before, I believe, they had red and yellow cards. Yeah. You just get told to leave the field.
What did he do?
It was actually, I remember seeing it, but it was he kicked out. He kicked. Mm. I think he kicked a Scotland player in the head. Yeah. It's on YouTube. And the one before that was 1925. No, C.J. Brownlee. But yeah, Colin Meads here in 1967.
Catch some sizzling summer rugby at BT Murrayfield Stadium. It's the summer test and your chance to send the team off to Japan in style. First up, Scotland take on France on Saturday the 24th of August. Kickoff 10 past 1. Scotland then face Georgia on Friday the 6th of September. Kickoff 7:30. Bring your family and friends for a big day out in Edinburgh. Scotland v France and Scotland v Georgia at BT Murrayfield this summer. Tickets on sale now at scottishrugby.org.
We're back here, Orium. Scotland are continuing their preparations for the Rugby World Cup. Delighted to have Stuart Hogg and Kelly Brown with us. Hoggy, Kelly, how are we?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here.
I'm all good, thanks. Yeah, as you just said, yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
We've got Al Mossy here as well. Hoggy, I'll start
really with you. Really off, I mentioned anymore, Mossy.
I'm not pleased to be here.
No, not even happy you were here. Just, oh, we've got them here too.
Man, when you've been on every one, it's not quite as exciting, is it, to be honest?
Look at me, he doesn't care. Right, sorry, Jamie, over to you.
You're doing a great job, Jamie.
Delighted to have Alan Mossy here as well, as I said. I'll start with you, Hoggy. You know, this is getting to that crunch time now. The games aren't too far away. How's your week been so far, like, ahead of the first game next week?
Yeah, it's been very good. You know, the boys are coming in at lunchtime today, just a light weight session and a unit session. So now we're very much looking forward to hitting the week hard and the challenges that are coming our way in the next few weeks.
Do you think, like, it's weird sometimes in pre-season, you know when you're ready for a game. Are you at that point now where you're ready to play, or sometimes at early pre-season you're quite glad there's not a game because you're enjoying the pain of pre-season, and you know it's probably too close to the end of last season, but are you and the squad now ready for a game?
Yeah, I reckon so. It's getting to the stage now that, you know, we're working a lot on our actual rugby attack shape and our defensive structures, and you know, we feel we're in a very good place, you know, physically, mentally, and as you say, we're just ready to fire into the games. You know, it's a long old pre-season, and the boys are very much looking forward to the games that are coming our way over the next few weeks.
Just a bit of release as well, eh? Like all that aggression and that anger that you build up through all that training that week to week in the season you get rid of, but through a 3 month block it's hard.
You can hit each arm, get it out, is that what you mean?
Well, I was always just avoid the guys that had been locked in the gym for 3 months. That was the plan in the first game of pre-season. The guys that made the biggest gains, keep away from them. Like,
Kelly, you're seeing it from a different side. Give it a bit of context. You're coaching at Saracens, heavily involved in the academy. You've been a bit species with the senior squad as well, predominantly contact focused, and that's what you come up here and do for Gregor and his team as well.
Yeah. So I'm an academy coach at Saracens, and I coach our second team in the Premiership Cup and the Premiership Shield. And then on top of that, I do a day a week with the seniors on the contact. And so I'm doing that up here as well. So I fly up every Sunday, and then I'm up here Monday, Tuesday, and then I fly back home. And it's great to be involved. And I think as we build into these games, it's been good because we've been able to do slightly more on the contact side because we need to build it up. And the boys have been great, and I've enjoyed it.
Over 2 years and then over the next kind of 6 months, how much, because contact's just such a massive part of the game and such a finely tuned part of the game, how much change have you seen in the 2 years you've been doing it, and how much do you see the contact and the in and around the contact changing over the next 3 months in the World Cup?
I think what the main thing is probably over the last 2 years is just the ball and play time's gone up, and so the number of contacts, it's just more and more every single year, and because everyone's constantly
there's no drop in intensity, is there?
No, and they're constantly striving to get bigger and stronger and faster and all these sorts of things. And so I think a lot of the technical points I think are similar. It's just the number of the contacts. And so as the contact coach, you're essentially just trying to build a habit. So when the guys are tired, and for example, if it's the ball carrier, when he's tired, he doesn't just flop on the floor because that's an easy steal. He actually, when he's tired, he goes and then he works on the floor and he puts the ball back on a plate. And so it's these sorts of things that we're trying to build.
And do you think there's less discrepancy between the best player and the team who's at contact and the poorest player than there was maybe a few years ago? Like, everybody's pretty good at contact now. Is
sounded like a loaded question, we'll see.
Well, yeah, when we played there was a fairly big discrepancy.
It was Andy Robinson used to talk
good
about
bad contact players.
Everybody's got a number 7 on their back. Aye. But at that stage we probably didn't. Aye. So it's closer to that.
But everybody's now at
17.
Sorry, Al, that was came to me there.
You said that beautifully. I think in the attacking contact, I think a lot of guys are at a similar sort of level. I do still think in defence, there's guys that are your specialists in the Jackals, and so your open sides and your tight head props are often because they're like
Hoggy's pointing himself here, Kelly.
And Hoggy's very good. Is he good when he gets through as a last line of defence? As a fullback, I do think it's an important skill because often it's off a line break and you need to slow the ball down.
Oh, he said nice things about you, Hoggy. Now, there's probably only one answer because two of them are sitting here, but having guys you played with and guys that know the game very well now coming back into the coaching, what difference does that make? Are you enjoying that element of it?
Yeah, I love it because I played with Kelly and Big Al and when you boys were kind of finishing up, but it was great to learn a few boys.
We weren't finishing up, actually. I was going strong, Kelly. What were you?
I was finished up. I don't think I was finishing up.
You were still playing. We've been together for 7 years. I was finishing up.
You were still playing, but you answered the rest.
You were out there anyway.
Yeah, he was on the pitch.
I was more talking about these two guys because they're on the pitch with you as far as coaching is concerned.
I love it. I love it because, as I say, I played with Kelly and it's great to see him back in Scotland, but also Mossy, one of the best players to ever play the game, and to have the chance to learn off him on a weekly basis is pretty special. His enthusiasm, his energy is second to none, and to have the chance to say to learn off him and be around him is just a bundle of joy, and it's great to have in the camp.
Just a fact check, Hoggy there. Hoggy made his debut in 2012 against Wales. That was, you retired just a few months before after the World Cup, and Al, you were on the bench for that game. So
I know, I remember standing next to him. He went on,
should have been a try
after
Hoggy.
About he went on after about 10 minutes, didn't you?
I remember
should have been a try.
Oh, it was a try, must have tried a try. But I remember just going into the anthems, it was myself and Dunkey Weir and Ed Calman were about to make a debut, and you jumped in between me and Dunks, and as we were walking off you just said, try and stay involved in the game because you never know when you're going to be on. And as you say, the first time we went to warm up, I think it was about 10 minutes into the game, Max is down and I was on. So that was the exact same kind of thing that you told me, I told Darcy in the autumn just passed. So it's these little things that you always remember.
I learned that from Ali Hogg, because he used to sit, if you were on the bench together, he'd be sitting out giving out the sweeties until about 60 minutes. If you got the nod before
Hoggy
60.
Ali Hogg was pretty laid back, wasn't he?
He was pretty laid back.
Who was that on the wing then? Was Maxi on the wing?
Maxi was on the wing, and then Rory Lamont moved from fullback to wing, and I came on at fullback, right,
And the try we're referring to was deemed to be a forward pass, wasn't it?
No, I was meant to have knocked it on because it was a DeLuca left-handed pass that wasn't quite in the bread basket. I think it was Roman Pratt, the referee at the time, if he had gone to the TMO, it was blatantly a try, but...
So he didn't go to TMO then?
No, he didn't, because he thought it was a guaranteed knock on, and being in Wales they didn't exactly put the replays on the big screens. It's a shame they did that the next time round. It could have been a try, but
what do you mean the next time round? What are you talking about there, buddy?
We'll just bypass
that.
It's fine.
Your 2012 Scotland debut, but when did you come into Glasgow?
2010. Yeah, I played two games, 2010-11 season.
Still commuting up and down the road from Hoyt?
I was up by then. I'd done about 3 or 4 months commuting, started to really settle about Christmas time, and I had two games during the Six Nations when the boys were away, and gave Bernie Stortoni a little rest because I think he had played a hell of a lot of rugby.
He played a lot of games, Bernie.
He caught every kick.
The most flexible man on the planet.
Decent man to work with, to learn off Bernie though.
I was quality, apart from the fact that when Lenine told me I was going to be a fullback, he was like, I want you to do some high ball practice with Bernie, the safest man on the planet. He used to tell me that, I think he had two kids at the time. This is a true story, by the way.
He had two kids
at the time, and he was like, my daughter's just been born, so that's my daughter in there and you've got to catch her. No doubt Hoggy being Hoggy dropped the first one. Oh,
sorry.
And I said, try again. He went, no, I've only got two kids. So these are the kind of things that you remember. But now Bernie was class to learn from, and you know, he retired that summer, which gave me another little opportunity to play. And I think it was the kind of first, I had to get six games before Christmas to get a contract, and Pete Murchie picked up a shoulder injury in the warm up game against Sale Sharks at Fair Hill. I think it was Newcastle actually. So I managed to play the first six games and got my contract, so pretty chuffed.
And the rest.
And was that the same year that he scored that hat trick over Munster? Or was that the next again season?
That was that season.
That was that season played at 13, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we came back from the Six Nations in 2012. And we went across to Munster and played at Musgrave Park. When you used to run out from opposite ends, the change rooms are opposite ends of the pitch. And I think we still got beat by that game. We got beat in that game, didn't we?
But we got
a bonus point. We got a bonus
Your
point.
Your memory is unbelievable. I can remember nothing from my playing days.
She's unreal.
It's ridiculous how you remember everything. I'm like, I was just trying to get through it. These guys are taking in all the details.
These guys are in the back writing their diary. It's a warm summer's evening here. Must go fuck. Running out from other end of the park.
Okay. What I thought I'd do is I put together a quiz for you, Kelly, and for you, Hoggy. I know you like your quizzes. Hoggy, you're looking like you're not impressed, but you genuinely love this. I know
this
you do.
Is,
so I've got it. It's a Scottish sports quiz.
This will not be good.
I'll start off with you, Hoggy.
I don't live in Scotland, so that doesn't help. Can I just put a caveat?
You're Scottish through and through, though, Kelly.
I am Scottish through and through, but I've not lived here for 9 years, so I'm just putting out there. I don't know a lot about Scottish football.
I think you'll be all right.
Okay, let's go.
Right, Hoggy, I'll start with you. So question number one, which player is regarded as one of the greatest of all time, signed for Hibs in 1979?
Oh, Uncle Georgie Best.
George.
Uncle George.
Are all the answers it's a family member, is it?
No, that was
or a fake family member. All right, okay, so that story's not true.
That's not fair, is it? If he gets family members, is this
I was just jealous.
You better give us a bit of insight into that, Hoggy.
We'll come back to
that. That's for another time, yeah.
Which Scots won the Open Championship in 1985 and 1999?
Sandy Lyle.
Yep, in 85.
And what was the other one, sorry?
1999.
Was it Paul Warwick?
Correct. Question number three. Which football club in Scotland became the first all-seater stadium in Britain?
Good question.
Very good question. What year?
I don't have that information.
How many seats?
I don't have that information on me.
All of them.
Has Hoggy played at that stadium?
No, but he has been to an open session there. In that area. Just a caveat.
In the same country.
Give us another clue, I might jump in on. Is it
Glasgow? I was going to say Fir Hill, but.
Is it?
Wet.
Paisley.
A clue for you.
St Mirren? No. Why do you say wet?
Clydebank. It's where Mark Peller was born.
Never been there, Jamie. I was injured at the time. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
All right, well, I did that.
We'll probably scrap that question.
Who has more Scotland caps, Mike Blair or Gregor Townsend?
Gregor is 85.
Wrong.
I thought he was 82, is he?
Gregor's 82, correct.
Mike could be 85.
Correct.
Mike.
So who's got more?
Mike.
Name the five teams Sir Alex Ferguson has managed.
St Mirren.
Yep.
Manchester United.
Yep.
Aberdeen.
Yep.
Clydebank.
Wrong.
No, that's right. Is that wrong?
No.
Right, so how many I got there? Sorry, I've got three. Manchester United, St Mirren. We done this in a quiz not that long ago as well.
MDL scored it.
East Stirling.
Correct, Moss. East Stirling shirt.
Nah.
One more.
Was it right at the beginning?
I don't have that information on
Development. No.
Scotland or England?
Scotland, correct answer.
What? Scotland.
That wasn't his answer.
He said it was Scotland or England, but I remember it was the Scotland national team.
This is it.
Well, that's embarrassing. Kelly, question for you. In 2021, where will the Open Golf Championship be held?
St Andrews.
Correct. Which snooker player won the championship seven times in the 90s?
That's got to be Stephen Henry.
Correct. Nice. Which Scottish rugby player scored the first ever try for Scotland in a Rugby World Cup?
Oh, so oh. 1987.
Played for Gala.
Mossy?
No. 97. Steady on.
We're back or forward?
Forward. I think if I was right, but I've known. Yeah, forward. Position you played sometimes.
Was it Jim Calder?
No.
Derek White?
Derek White, correct.
Yeah,
football question, so I don't know how in football, who scored a goal in a Euro qualifier in 2007 in Paris versus France?
I thought it was James McFadden.
It was.
We were watching the game
in the World Cup. Yeah. Mm.
Name the five teams Vern Cotter has been head coach of.
Scotland or England?
Scotland. Scotland, Clermont.
Yep.
Montpellier.
Yep.
I'm struggling now. There's going to be one in New Zealand, is there?
Yep. Not sure?
No, I don't know.
Bay of Plenty. And the other one was the Barbarians.
Oh, yeah. Good that.
That quiz ended in a bit of a low.
We'll finish in a high because I've got a tiebreaker question. Oh, yeah. So everyone's involved in this.
Oh, okay. I'll run more system.
Without conversing with each other, how many Scotland caps combined are there between Greg Laidlaw, Stuart Hogg, Alan Mossy?
I'll just hazard a guess at 200 and... No, 324.
He's running out of fingers.
324, just off the top of my head.
Who was it? Him as well, right? So
I'm just going to go 300.
170 plus... Yeah, plus... It's about the 300 mark. 300.
Can he just
304.
Hoggy.
Wait, now give me a second.
There he goes.
I've got this.
Are you doing it exact? You will be doing it exact.
Greg, 68. Hoggy, 67. Al, 56. And Mossy, 109. So Kelly Brown was right.
I was right.
Kelly Brown was right on the 300. Yeah, bang on.
Oh, nice.
It was just math, isn't it?
Yeah. 300.
Guys, I know you've got to go off and do some more things around camp, but thank you very much for your time, Kelly, Mossy, Al and Hoggy, and speak to you all soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, so we're back because Hoggy's gone onto his phone and checked Jamie's stats, which are wrong. So Hoggy, why? What was wrong?
Jamie thought Greg had 68 caps, but he's actually got 71.
So it's 303.
Okay, that was it. We just wanted to come back on because Jamie said, no, we'll edit it later. We're not going to edit it later. A mistake's a mistake. We'll put our hands up.
Yeah. I'll come to you on this, but closer to home, it's been a busy couple of weeks here at Scottish Rugby. We had our AGM at the weekend here at PT Murrayfield, and we had Royal Bank Rugby Force weekend as well, and just announced Crabbies with Scottish Rugby in Edinburgh, a lot of partnership there, and Super 6 broadcast deal. It's all been happening here.
Yes, it's great news, Jamie, that we've got the broadcast rights nailed down. BBC are going to shoot through the BBC website, which then anybody can pick up through a smart television as well. I think Sunday afternoon's a great time for that as well. I look at my own life and there's enough sport crammed in. I can see myself sitting down on Sunday at 2 o'clock and taking in those games. Obviously Scottish Rugby TV are going to be broadcasting it as well, and the cherry on the top is the fact that BBC Scotland are going to show the final live, so it really does enhance the tournament. There's a lot of people very busy over the weekend, as you rightly mentioned, Jamie, in the Royal Bank Rugby Force. I dropped into Alan Glenn's. I missed the hard work, fortunately or unfortunately for me, but there are a lot of volunteers down in the morning, and I know many clubs around Scotland did as well, and it's worth mentioning how much these clubs rely on the volunteers, and it's a great weekend for showcasing that. And lastly, yeah, the Crabbies announcement, fantastic. Crabbies have had a long standing relationship with Scottish Rugby, that now deepens to become the official gin partner. We've shown on match day that gin is becoming a popular drink, and I'm sure Crabbies will have some fun activation for all the Scotland fans.
Yeah, massive thank you to all the players, coaches, volunteers that helped out at Royal Bank Rugby Force the weekend. Much appreciated for everybody here at Scottish Rugby. That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.